I'm Adam Schneider with Healthcare for the Homeless in Baltimore. So just by way of introduction, I'm approaching this not as an academic. I'm a social worker by training. Before that, I did work on a PhD in philosophy, so I've done that sort of stuff, but really approaching this more as an activist. And when we had the training in Baltimore, I was one of the people who came and talked about successes. Mostly, I think I reflected upon failure, because as the great North Carolina basketball coach, Dean Smith, said once, always, 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 always fail. We learn a great deal from our failures as well as our successes. So, but do want to reflect a little bit on some successes here. So the title talks about policy change, but we also really need to think about social and political and economic change. The learning objectives, right? You can read, I don't need to read them for you. One of the things when I teach classes on social change and policy change, talk about is this is happening all the time. Sometimes we act like, you know, we're going to come in and, you know, we are going to start social change. Right, social change is happening all the time. The question is, who has the power presently to make the change? Who is it benefiting? And how can we impact the change that is going on? David Harvey and others have written about this. And so the question for us is really, in Baltimore, was how do we create the power to create the change that we want to see in the world? Not just to be the change, as Gandhi said, but to really create the change that we wish to see in the world. I hate to improve upon Gandhi, but, you know. There was, as a little bit of context, there was a group of people who were living in an encampment together, and they had been moved from one public place to another. The city would come in, either the police or a quasi-downtown, a quasi-public downtown entity, you know, that wear, you know, sort of comic opera uniforms, and sweep and tell tourists where to go, would move this group from place to place. And at one point, something interesting happened. At one point, the Baltimore Sun, so this happens everywhere, right? I mean, this happens in every city. It happened in Baltimore. But the Baltimore Sun, a reporter from the local newspaper, was coming by one morning when this was happening, and video recorded this and put it up on the paper's website. So this created among a lot of people an awareness, a new awareness among some, and a real outrage among others that this was going on. And so what we tried to do, and ultimately were successful in, was creating a organizing and advocacy campaign around this moving of people that were experiencing homelessness. So this happened on a Thursday, if memory serves. Yes. Hey, look at that. It is a Thursday. And the following day, a group of students, some lawyers, went down and kind of walked the area where people had been forcibly moved from and really tried to just do outreach, right? I mean, if you're going to work with a community, first you need to connect with the people that are living in the community. It's basic, but sometimes we don't necessarily think about that. So went down, talked to people, and a week later, a group of students from a number of different colleges and universities in the area held a sleepout in the area that people were moved from, in solidarity with the people who were experiencing homelessness in that space. And the following morning, they walked to the Baltimore Housing Authority, which was just a couple of blocks away, and went inside and said, you know, the city doesn't want people living in this space. They, you know, last week moved people from this space. As a matter of fact, you know, what emerged out of the conversation, something that, you know, isn't all that startling, but none of the people really wanted to sleep in that grassy area along the interstate, right? They all would have rather had their own apartments. The problem was that all of them were very poor, and they didn't have housing that they could afford, right? So went to the housing authority, right? Makes sense. You need housing. Let's go to Baltimore Housing. It's right there on the side of the building. Went in, asked to speak to the housing commissioner. The housing commissioner was busy. So stood outside with some signs, and this was during rush hour. And about 20 minutes later, somebody might have even been less. Somebody from the housing authority came out and said, "Actually, the commissioner will be able to see you. Why don't you all come inside?" So we're taken off of the street and came in. And over the next months, this group of people who are experiencing homelessness, students, attorneys, and other allies, developed a campaign. Some of the goals of the campaign were defensive, right, to prevent these sort of sweeps, to prevent organizations from forcibly moving folks, which doesn't help anybody. Prevent people from being arrested because, you know, once you have a criminal record, it's harder to get a job that you need in order to get an income. It's harder to get into housing. In Baltimore City, if you have a misdemeanor charge, you can't get into public housing for 18 months. And during that time, right, you're forced to sleep on the streets, which means that you are then going to get more misdemeanor offenses, which then means you're not going to be able to, right, you sort of could go on. So preventing these bad things from happening, but then also looking towards a progressive strategy, right, a constructive strategy, just not just a merely obstructive one. Because, you know, we put a great deal of work, organizations do, into preventing the criminalization of homelessness, but we also really need to look at the crime that exists in our society that permits homelessness. Right, homelessness, the lack of affordable housing, the lack of universal comprehensive health care, poverty in the wealthiest state, Maryland, in the wealthiest country, the United States, in the history of history. I mean, that's the broader crime, and we needed to look at that too. The people in the encampment and the organizers worked to do was to develop relationships with allies, and to use those relationships with, for example, the health commissioner, to influence the opponents, for example, the housing commissioner, and developed relationships closely with the press. So the press was about the Baltimore Sun's offices were about two blocks away. We developed close relationships there, and whenever the police would come to forcibly move somebody, one person would walk down to the press, another person would walk to a clinic right in the area and would call one of the students. There was a phone tree. So 20 minutes later, the press, some lawyers, and a group of students would be there ready to help the police move these people's belongings into the houses that they were going to provide, right? Because if you're going to move people, you have to have a place. Well, nobody got arrested. Nobody was forcibly moved. And this movement then developed into some other developed some other tactics. And during the when the weather got cold, they started to build shanties. They started open burning pits. And you know, one of the other things that Gandhi taught us, right, was that you want to be not just symbolic, but you want to be practical too, right? The March to the Sea was about getting salt, right? It was a symbolic thing, but it was also very practical. Having a shanty was really important to stay warm, right? Having a fire was important to stay warm. But they couldn't allow this. So, right, so what happened was, in late December of that year, the Baltimore City Housing found 40 units of housing, and they put people into those units over the next couple of months. During the interim time, they put people in hotels. So what's interesting is that when power is developed, you know, you can really see policy and social change. Now, this morphed into a broader campaign of people that were experiencing homelessness and their allies, looking to change public policy, to raise community awareness, and to build leadership and solidarity. One of the challenges, though, that we discovered during this campaign was, you know, again, these are relatively obvious, right? There are real challenges of organizing people who are without housing. If anybody's done organizing, it's really challenging to do door knocking. It's even more difficult when there are no doors to knock on, right? People who are experiencing homelessness, people who are very poor, often have competing needs that are very, very urgent, right, and are very, very serious. And if you have to choose between a place to sleep, something to eat, or going to see your doctor, or going to an organizing meeting, as much as, you know, an organizing meeting might, you know where you're going to choose. So all of these sorts of things ended up us recognizing that participation was going to be inconsistent. And because we recognized that, we recognized that it was our job to change what we were doing to meet the needs of the people that we were working with. Right? It's not their job to engage me. It's my job to creatively engage them and to figure out how do I meet them where they are. And so what we did, participating in the advocacy workshops, as was spoken about before, the components were used in two different ways. We held leadership organizing meetings about monthly where we talked about broader strategy and tactics, and used the components in the to train the leaders, and the leaders facilitated those meetings. And then we held weekly meetings with anybody who was interested, and it was very, very practical. It wasn't at all theoretical, because, right, I mean, talking about theory is, you know, not something that you want to do when you are being mistreated at the shelter. You want to talk about how do we change the way that things are going on here. When you don't have housing, you know, theorizing about, oh, well, what is power? Well, you know, I mean, Foucault said, right? I mean, that's not what we want. What we want to do is we want to figure out how do we mobilize. And through this, we've had a great deal of success. So this group has started a street newspaper in Baltimore City over the past couple of years. They've held other sleepouts. They have lobbied nationally. They have a radio show on one of the college radio stations. They have a speakers bureau that goes out. And all of this was based on the skills that were developed and on the partnerships that were developed. The colleges and universities, as well as partners more broadly in the community, were critical to the success of all of these things. One of the pictures there is Try Living on $185 a Month. That's the state temporary disability program. And the state was going to cut that. So one of the things that this group learned to do was also to do participatory research and engaging people who are experiencing homelessness in research about issues that matter to them, and using that then to change policy. So it's important to integrate advocacy and direct service for all these reasons, especially because social change is necessary, right? It's absolutely necessary, and not only that, but we're all going to be better. We're going to be better off if we're engaged in advocacy and organizing. Thank you.